Today I'm going to speak on the status first, which will be kind of a group of photographs to show the equipment that we're building and the layout for LCLS, and then spend some time on the challenges for the LCLS system. And I have the pleasure of presenting the results of the LCLS team, which is quite numerous to list, but I would like to make sure that they get credit for much of the hard work that's gone into this system. So LCLS will actually take advantage of the 2-mile LINAC, which is already in existence at SLAC, and will use the last kilometer of the LINAC. The injector will be located at the 2/3 point of the LINAC at sector 20. There are 30 sectors to the SLAC LINAC, and the beam will be accelerated to about 15 GeV for the X-ray FEL. After the LINAC will be an undulator hall where construction is started, some demolishing of the preparatory area, I should say, in the research yard here, area here, and some tunneling will be done through to a near experimental hall and also a far experimental hall in the distance here past where the old SLC building is located. The parameters for LCLS are given here. There are the wavelength range will extend from 1.5 to 15 angstroms, and will use beam energies from 4 to 13 GeV. The emittance is the real challenge of this machine. 1.2 millimeter radians for the emittance with a peak current of 3.4 kiloamps will put LCLS in a whole new regime of operation for FELs. And for my part in the injector, this has been a real challenge, and we've tried to push the injector work as much as possible in order to preserve this, which has some unique features in it, which I'm going to discuss later. The bunch length at the undulator will be less than 200 femtoseconds, depending upon how much compression we put on the beam. The saturation lengths are given here, saturating in 87 meters at the shortest wavelength, and very high peak powers at saturation, 8 to 17 gigawatts, and a lot of photons per pulse, and a lot of peak brightness here of 10 to 33, which will push us up to 10 to 12 orders of magnitude above other light sources. Let me start with the injector and talk about that a little bit. The injector at sector 20 uses a RF photocathode gun, an S-band, and I'll show pictures of that in detail. That the construction of that is now finished, and we're going to enter the hot test or RF testing phase of it. It's 135 MeV at this point, 6 MeV out of the gun, 135 after two S-band accelerator sections, some beam conditioning, and then injection into the main LINAC via this 35-degree bend. And there's a kilometer and a half of LINAC down here. So I should say 2 kilometers of LINAC this way back to the high-energy physics source, and then another kilometer to the right to give us the 15 GeV. After injection onto the LINAC line, there's 3 accelerator sections bringing the beam energy up to 250 MeV, and then the first bunch compressor exists here with some diagnostics wire scanners. An interesting device here that we should thank our friends at DAISY for, that did some beautiful work, the Russian team there, I should call them, on a laser heater that was suggested in order to suppress the longitudinal space charge and coherent space charge instabilities. We feel as though this is an important element of our system and will be installed in about a year from now. I should say in this coming downtime, as we call it right now, all of this equipment through here is being installed to the end of bunch compressor 1, and that will allow us to start the commissioning of the injector in the January-February timeframe. The full layout of the machine is shown here. This is the injector part that I showed. There's further acceleration with BC2, bunch compressor 2 at 4.3 GeV, and then further acceleration up to 13.6 GeV with a dog-leg bend into the undulator, and then also the option for another undulator system bending another way in this system. So there's, in addition to linearized longitudinal phase space, something that we demonstrated in the mid-90s when I was still at Boeing, was a third harmonic. In this case, it's a fourth harmonic. It doesn't matter too much what the harmonic is at some point in order to eliminate the curvature term due to the RF waveform during the acceleration to linearize the phase space and give us a more uniform peak current in the bunch when it is compressed. Now I'm going to show you pictures of hardware. This is the table, basically the support for the BC1 chicane. The dipoles are not sitting on at this point, but it has the feature of being able to move the center dipoles in order to have a straight-through path for the beam so that one would have no compression, or move it off and make variable compression to a variable R5-6. We're assembling a lot of the components for it. There's a spectrometer dipole for the gun, which has been squeezed in, I have to say, between the gun and the first accelerator section so we can characterize the longitudinal characteristics of the beam, the energy and energy spread. Some spectrometers, quadrupoles, and an additional solenoid, which will go on to the accelerator sections. The drive laser is in place and operating. The drive laser is a Thai Sapphire laser. I'll talk more about the details of the specifications for it. It was purchased as a complete unit from Thales Lasers, and we're quite pleased with its performance. It's a quasi-CW diode-pumped laser with a regen, and is demonstrating quite good performance at this point. What you see here is the light, everything being lit up by the pump lasers from the YELF pumps. A little bit more on the region at sector 20. This is the foot. This gives you an idea of the footprint for the drive laser, which is sitting on its table at sector 20 in a new clean room for it. It's one of the diagnostics that we've recently received is femtosecond, a Fesca 200 street camera, and also we plan to put in some cross correlators and single shot correlators for making some other measurements. The vault area downstairs, where the injector is at, looked maybe spacious in the picture that I was showing before, but it's actually quite cramped. These off-axis vaults were actually constructed in the 60s, in 62, when the rest of the LINAC was built, and given the wisdom of our forefathers that we could all learn from, they put one of these vaults at Sector 10 and at Sector 20 with the idea that one would inject beams from these locations. And so this really helps the affordability of putting these extra injectors onto the quite large investment of the SLAC LINAC. However, they could be larger. I wish they would have made them larger. And these, I have to say, are three people that worked very hard in order to get the drive laser system together. This is Sasha Gilovich and Alan Minahari and John Castro, who was on our drive laser team, and a few others. The gun is now finished construction, and these are very recent photographs of it. And it's based on a derivative of the BNL-4 gun, or also we referred to it as the BNL SLAC UCLA S-band gun. But in this case, it's had many modifications to it in order to achieve this 1 micron emittance performance that's going to be needed. As you can see, the gun actually just looks like it's a bit of the BNL gun on steroids, maybe. But it's a dual feed gun. The RF would come in here and is split equally in order to feed into the full cell. We made a few modifications to it that we think will improve the performance considerably. This is a cutout of the computer drawing, a computerized image of the gun, showing what would be interior to this, what looks like a pretty complicated thing. the changes that were made to the gun include full summatorization of the RF fields by not only having a dual feed to remove any dipole fields, but also going to a racetrack geometry for the full cell in order to eliminate any quadrupole. Because this gun has to run at 120 hertz rather than 50, 60 hertz was the highest rep rate the previous guns of this design had operated. There were issues with the pulsed heating and the aging of the coupling port here. So we actually opened this up and went to a Z-coupled type of arrangement rather than the theta coupling for those in the business. And this allowed us to really reduce the amount of that pulsed heating. So the gun should not age as much as the original design. We also increased the mode separation considerably in order to eliminate the zero pi mode beating between the two modes in the gun itself. And the cathode plate here that you see is a completely different redesign that we also think will allow us to move on to a load lock system and other cathode types in the future. This is just a view that those of you that might not have visited SLAC, looking along the Klystron Gallery, it's quite impressive it is indeed a big science project, that to look down a room or building that's 2 miles long, 3 kilometers long, and that's what's receding into the distance. These are the Klystrons, and the LINAC itself is 10 meters below grade. The single undulator test stand, the undulators are under fabrication by Argonne National Lab. They designed them, and they're responsible for the design and construction of the undulators themselves, as well as all the support structure and the mover system for the undulator system. What's shown here is a dummy undulator, which is sitting at Argonne on a test stand here in order to test out all of the mover systems for the undulators. At SLAC, a new magnetic measurement lab was built in order to make the magnetic measurements of all of the undulators and in order to shim them to the field quality that was required, which is, as you can imagine, a very tight tolerance. This shows the new facility with the test benches on it, and it's probably not too obvious, but there's actually an undulator sitting back here. I have some other pictures, I think, later on that. Yeah, here they are. So the undulators, I should say that some discussion of this will be done later. And the guy that's a real expert on this, that's been managing this, is Steve Milton. If you want more details on this, I would suggest that you discuss it, talk to Steve. But they're made out of, there's a titanium support structure here for it. It's this clamshell-like arrangement with the magnets inserted from the side all along here. So this whole one side of the undulator is open, and there are 33 of the undulators that will be put into the system, and they're made in such a way that they can be removed one at a time so that one can look at what it's doing to the beam performance and look at what the gain is down through the system. The layout for LCLS is shown here, in this kind of topographical representation. This is the end of the LINAC down in this region, and the beam is brought through the beam transport hall, which has been kind of shaped in such a way that one could imagine other beam lines coming out. But for the first version of LCLS, the beam will come out straight through here and into the undulator hall, which will house the 100 meter or so long undulator. Some new office buildings will be built here on the hill. If you read these contours, you can see they'll go underground at this point. This will be the location of the near experimental hall, continuation of the beam line out here to where the far hall will be. Those that have been there, this is the building that housed the old SLC, the SLAC linear collider detector, was in that interaction point. Some pictures of what that view looks like. This is looking back towards the LINAC as the beam is exiting from the LINAC region, and they're going through the SLAC research yard here. I've drawn an arrow here to indicate the direction that the X-ray, that the electron beam will come. This will still be electrons at this point because the undulator hall, actually, this is looking back then the other direction now, in the direction that the electron beam will go into, and the X-ray beam, is that the undulator hull will actually start at a hillside here, and there will be tunneling to go back into it. There's this final focus test beam area, which some people remember quite fondly, and unfortunately, it's gone. I'm sorry. This is the remains of it, and but it makes way for the future. The beam exits then on the other side of that hillock that I was just mentioning, and at this point now it's an X-ray beam, magically changed inside the hill, and continues on to the experimental area. Here's the SLC hall, which is sitting here, and with from the hilltops you have a nice view of San Francisco Bay, and it's actually quite nice. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the technical challenges. Jorg is filling in for Jerry, but Jerry, I did talk to Jerry before I left, and he wanted to say a little bit about what problems people have to worry about. And some of them are high-tech emittance, and some of them are low-tech, like vibration. So I've tried to list here all of the different things, kind of a catch-all of what we've worried about. Of course, the gun emittance is of paramount importance. This includes the cathode emittance, the uniformity, and the quantum efficiency. And I have to say, for the quantum efficiency, we spent a lot of time trying to match the drive laser with the quantum efficiency and the other beam parameters. The RF field quality, I mentioned some of that we've symmetrized the gun. The gun solenoid is a very important component of this, and because it's key to the concept of emittance compensation. Drive laser reliability and stability. This is a user facility. We're interested in it from a beam physics point of view as an experiment, but we have to keep in our minds that this is a user facility, which means that this thing has to run 24/7, very reliably, and compete with the existing storage rings, which have 90% plus uptime or a beam available time. And this will be a real challenge for these machines. I should say this is, in sum total, this will be one of the greatest challenges because we haven't used. There have been very few cases, if any. I think they can only be counted on two fingers, on where there's been a user facility that's used a photo injector. This is the advantage of a thermionic system, potentially. So, and then there's also the 3D shaping, which is necessary in order to produce the good emittance. And believe it or not, in the laser area, we find that the biggest problem is in the UV diagnostics. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Emittance preservation, I mentioned the laser heater, aberrations, CSR. Beam instabilities, and again, laser heater, we think we're taking care of it with all of that. Bunch length diagnostics and control. Because of the compression that's being done, if there's phase instabilities, if there's a little bit of time instability, the bunch length is going to vary, and the laser is going to vary quite a bit. So, and to measure the bunch length online and have a feedback system has truly been an issue. There's alignment in general, and we've been finding this just in the magnetic measurements that I'm going to talk about a little bit more to make sure that we get good alignment and preserve it. Magnetic measurements themselves. Everything should be measured, calibrated, and well understood to make sure that we have it. And this is being addressed, like I say, both from measurements of the beamline components, but also of the new MMF, the magnetic measurement facility for the undulators. RF power, of course, vibrations, and temperature stability and control. I'm going to give you some of the numbers for the vibration issue, which is quite surprising when I was given the specs for what we had to worry about for vibrations at the injector, and the effect it would have on the beam at the undulator a kilometer away. The drive laser system itself that I mentioned is, we purchased it as a complete unit that you see here from Thales Lasers, and it has this kind of architecture. It's pretty much a standard CPA Thai Sapphire system, and we actually, the advancements in lasers have been quite remarkable. For the source, I should say, for the oscillator source on this, We initially spec'd from our requirements a half a picosecond, 500 femtoseconds for the laser, but during the course of bidding on it, we realized that we could decrease that spec or make it smaller down to 250 femtoseconds, and indeed they delivered a system which is stable to 150 to 200 femtoseconds. Beam is stretched. Those in the laser business know what this Dazzler is, this acousto-optic system that allows you to do the shaping of the bunch, prepare the pulse for the shaping through a region amplifier, a four-pass bow tie and a two-pass bow tie amplifier, and then on through the compressor and then the third harmonic generation in order to take the 800 nanometer light from the fundamental of this laser and put it and give it to us at, 765 nanometers and turn it into 255 nanometers. The numbers that I show here are the numbers that we'd spec, and all of these numbers are being met in the present laser. In fact, we're seeing closer to 3 millijoules out of the laser right now. But in all honesty, as we get into the details of the shaping with the Dazzler, we're going to lose some conversion efficiency in the third harmonic generator here. So we realize that. But again, for the diagnostics, this has actually been a challenge. We try to, we have a street camera, spectrometer, of course. We've just finished the construction of some cross correlators, and we have a transient gating frog, grating frog that we have purchased from Swamp Optics. Can you hear me? Hello? Okay. These are more of the details of the gun. I mentioned them before. I'll speed up a little bit. But it's a basic 1.6 cell design with these various modifications to it. And I'll just try to speak up, I guess. But the remarkable feature of it, I think, is the quadrupole correction. This shows the quadrupole field. The showing the quadrupole field correction. This is the standard. This is the quadrupole introduced by the coupling normally, and with the racetrack modification to the coupling cell, we can make it essentially zero. So this will help quite a bit. Plus, as I mentioned, the mode separation has been increased from 3.2 megahertz to 15 megahertz. Which is quite a significant change. We basically hit all of these numbers except for the beta. The gun that actually has built came in at 1.93, but that's close enough, and the beta is the hard thing to get anyway. Here's some references if you want more details of it. I should also point out that the full 3D fields had been put into Parmela in doing the simulations. For the cathode area, in parallel with the gun development work for the cathode, we've also put together what we're calling a cathode qualification system that will accept the LCLS-style cathodes that allow us to make a wavelength, a QE versus wavelength measurement in order to determine work functions and validity of the surface features of the cathode via AFM measurements, as well as an XPS, an X-ray photoelectron spectrometer system on the same chamber in order to look at surface contamination. As some of you might know from or remember from last year's FEL, I was talking about using a hydrogen ion gun in order to do surface cleaning of the cathode, and that's shown here in some of the results from it. The gun solenoid, I mentioned it's important in order to make the measurement. The focal length of this solenoid is about 15 centimeters. And if you look at this, you see that it's about 20 centimeters long. So it's the ultimate thick lens. And this means that one has to be very careful about any kind of aberrations that are introduced from this very strong focusing system. This is a view of it that's sitting on the test stand at the SLAC, at the other SLAC measurement facility. This is not at the MMF. And we've actually made rotating coil measurements on it, which you normally would do for quadrupoles, but in this case we're doing it for the solenoid. And I show some of the data down here for it, which shows what the integrated quadrupole field is, and that we have a quadrupole component that's producing equivalent focal lengths, peak focal lengths of about 100 meters, and 30 meters is our spec for this. The diagnostics are all essential. We've tried to put in all of the diagnostics that we could into the injector in order to fully understand the beam. There's two things here I'd like to point out that are a little bit different. One is that we were able to squeeze in, still keeping the Ferrario matching condition for the match of the gun beam into the accelerator section, squeeze in an electron spectrometer so that we could measure the energy and energy spread. This is not normally done, and it's always a guess as to exactly what you have here. So this will be a nice addition. The other thing that's really important, very important, is the transverse RF deflector. This allows us to make time slice measurements of the electron bunch, both using OTR screens here along this line here for measuring slice emittance, as well as combined with this injector spectrometer system down here that allow us to directly measure the longitudinal phase space. The resolution of this system here is high enough that we ought to be able to see the effect on the uncorrelated energy spread of the longitudinal phase space with and without the laser heater on, which is not shown here. Well, it's shown here graphically, but it's not indicated. This is the location of the laser heater in the system, because we want to, that's the way we will decohere the instabilities. This shows some of the modeling of the slice emittance technique that we're capable of doing on the system, and should really give us quite good performance. And the slice emittance and the linearity of the phase space is extremely important to be able to understand. Some of the things and some of the gotchas come in this area is that we're reusing some of the SLAC accelerator sections. For the injector, the two accelerator sections that we're using, we've actually modified them to go to dual feeds on the input couplers in order to semitize the fields more. One of the early uses, actually, of the coordinate measurement machine in the magnetic measurement lab before the undulator showed up was to actually measure the straightness of one of these accelerator sections. And when it was done, we found that there was like this, there was this millimeter bow in the thing along the length. If you put these numbers in and calculate the Wakefield effect, you find a 30% growth in emittance, which would have been unacceptable. So it's now been pushed on in order to straighten it, and I wasn't able to get the exact data, but now it bows 250 microns, 0.2 on the scale, which is now making it acceptable. But it's one of the things, I have to say, that you don't necessarily think about, and you think things are okay, but it could make your life really bad when you're trying to commission this thing and operate it. Another thing that people don't normally worry about are vibrations. This solenoid that's right after the gun is very strong, as I was mentioning. So if that solenoid vibrates, it's going to make the beam move with whatever magnification you have down at the undulator. Now, the beam is big at the gun. It's of order millimeters. But down at the undulator, it's tens of microns. And so one has to take this into account. Paul has done a nice analysis of this and has actually set a spec. In fact, we set specs for everything. We have quite an extensive database that lists all of the parameters for every component. And so he set the spec for what the RMS amplitude is for the tolerance of it. S1 here is that first solenoid out of the gun. And look at the number, 100 nanometers. When I saw that, I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to have problems. So we went over to another similar solenoid and made some measurements, and we've measured 90 nanometers for that system. So we think that if we take care with the supports, we'll be able to meet this spec. But again, it's something that we have to be worried about. And we're actually quite concerned about this for the LINAC components, which are actually old and are cantilevered in some cases, especially the quadrupoles. This is where it's dominantly a problem with the focusing elements. The undulator support system, I heard what's being done at Spring 8, and our approach is a little bit different. In this case, it's a fixed pedestal that's filled with sand in order to make it vibration and temperature stable, and this is the approach that we'll do it. And again, this is compliments of Steve, so you can discuss in more detail with him. On Thursday, Jim Welch is going to talk about an online measurement using spontaneous emission from dual undulators that will allow the K measurement to be made of the undulators. The K requirement is quite strict. You can read some of these numbers in here, but the performance is like 10 to the minus 3 that's required for the K accuracy. And it's not only the initial setup of the K, but also concerns about the aging of the K during radiation and what this is going to do. So please make sure that you listen to Jim's talk on this, because it's a nice approach, and I should say it was also done in collaboration with Benjin at Argonne as well. The undulator system is under construction. This shows a little bit more of it. And it looks like I'm going to come pretty close to the end, I hope. And I should just say that Heinz-Dieter Nguyen also has a talk on Thursday in which he's going to go through the alignment strategy. It's a non-trivial issue to align more than 100 meters of undulator to a micron level accuracy and keep it there. And we have to make sure that we're not spending all our time aligning undulators and not lasing. So a lot of time and effort's gone into that. Part of the design for that system in order to enable that alignment uses RF BPM detectors, which are located in the breaks between the undulator sections. So this shows the beam position monitor that's been built and tested at Argonne. So for the overall schedule then, this is kind of what we've got right now. The drive laser indeed did show up in July and is installed and operating and is undergoing its commissioning right now. The GaN injector and everything through BC1, that installation is now starting, has started, and is progressing right now and will run through the end of the year. And then we can begin the commissioning of the injector up to the 250 MeV operating point. And we have until the next downtime, which is here at the end of the summer again, in which the rest of the LINAC, the BC2 will be installed, and the installation, the undulations, and so on. We're hoping to get first light, first spontaneous light, come spring of 08. And actually start operating the FEL in 2 years during that summer. So in summary, I'd like to say that the construction has begun. The laser building at Sector 20 is finished. The drive laser is delivered, installed, and operating. The gun's fabricated, meeting specs, and we're going to start high-power testing in just a couple weeks. The beam line through BC1 installation has begun. FFTB is gone. The MMF is there. We tried to address as many of the technical issues, and we actually want to thank the community for many important contributions and discussions that I think that you might see some of your ideas in the design. And the commissioning should begin in early 2007, calendar year. And I think we're on track for producing beam for users in 2009. Thank you.
Thank you. So this paper is open for discussion. Is there a question? Yeah, please, Shintake-san.
I'm really impressed about your progress. But did you boost, accelerated the schedule than before you presented? Looked like you made the schedule a little bit earlier, faster than before.
Actually, I was accused of it being of it coming late. When we should have, I think in the original plans, we should have been turning on the gun about now instead of next January in its location at Sector 20. So, I mean, this is the schedule as it sits right now, which of course reflects all the realities of the program. So, but I hope I answered your question.
I remember something. Fast laser will start in end of the 2008 or 2009, I remember. But, okay, that's a detail.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry there's no more time for further questions. We're already over time. So let us thank the speaker again.